I did some pretty dumb things in my 20s, my 30s, you know, the impetuousness of youth.
But it's funny that you said 20s and 30s, and now 40s. Just because you're in your 40s, you don't do dumb things anymore.
Nope. I'm grown up. I'm mature. But I was one such unhealthy choice in my youth. I was messing around, and I fell, basically. I took a dumb fall. I took one of those falls that, like, oh, I can't believe I did that. I put myself in that situation. And I hit my head hard enough that I felt like I should go to the doctor. And I went to the hospital, and it was kind of late at night. They checked me out. They said that I had a slight concussion, and everything was fine. I didn't bother to call anyone to tell them about it because I didn't want to worry anyone, certainly not our easily worried and quite anxious mother. The next day, the phone was ringing. As I picked it up, I was watching TV. I was watching CNN, and I saw that on the bottom, it said actor Justin Long was in a car accident.
Wow.
And
slowest news day ever.
I know. And it sort of involved a car, but wasn't. It was bad. I mean, it was not.
It wasn't a moving car.
No. I was on. Anyway, my mother was calling. It was my mother calling. She had called. I was just looking at my phone. I saw like 3 missed calls. What is she calling? It must be some kind of emergency. It all hit me at the same time. And she, honey, oh my God. You know, of course she's panicked. And I said, no. And right away I opened the phone call trying to calm her down. And I successfully did, but it took a while.
Oof. Well, I'm glad you're okay. I'm glad you survived. Into your 40s.
And it had no lasting effect on me. What are we doing now?
Podcast.
Right.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream.
You're listening to Life is Short. I am your slightly regretful host, Justin Long.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboo.
And with me, as always, is who was also with me that night, that fateful night. Right. Helped me to take me to the hospital. It was very nice of
I
you,
did.
Christian.
And I helped discourage you from doing the dumb thing that you were doing.
Yes. Yeah, but it was too late.
You might say I saved your life that night.
Yeah, sort of. Yeah, you improved my life. You made it less risky.
Yes. Yeah. Hey, no regrets.
None.
Who says that? No regrets.
No regrets. No regrets.
Hey, no regrets. Oh, I know.
Who? No regrets.
I'll give you a hint. I'm nothing like this person. It's a fictional character. No regrets.
No regrets. Is it from Dazed and Confused?
No, it's from Friday Night Lights.
Oh, the Kyle Chandler?
No.
No regrets.
Tim Riggins.
Tim Riggins, the coolest.
Taylor Kitsch, yeah.
He says, yeah, no, hey, no regrets. Is that when he's mentoring the little kid? Remember when he has that?
He says it a lot. It's one of his catchphrases.
Oh, okay.
Catchphrase. It's not a catchphrase. It's something he would never say.
By the way, we were talking about, you know how Tim Allen does that? Would you say that's a catch? It's not a catchphrase.
Oh, no.
Is it a catch sound? A catch. That's Tim Allen's catch.
I don't know if there's such a thing as a catch sound.
Catch grunt.
So I'd say no.
What is it?
I also don't think it's a catch phrase because phrases need to have words, I think.
I think so.
Catch
grunt.
Good question.
All right. Well,
when we should have him on the show.
That would be great.
Tim Allen.
Where are we talking about? That moment where my mother, mother learned about my accident on CNN.
Because you wanted to brag about being on CNN.
Yes, mission accomplished. But also, why am I bragging about being on CNN? Our guest today has a show on CNN. He is the host of a show called United Shades of America. Our guest, of course, is
Kamau Bell. It's W. Kamau Bell. That's his full name.
That's a cool one. That's a distinguished name.
Sure is.
W. Kamau Bell. It's like...
It's like C. Everett Koop.
Yes, or W.E.B. Du Bois.
Du Bois.
Du Bois, huh?
Yeah.
Shit, I charged into that with confidence. Du Bois.
It looks like Du Bois.
It does.
You're thinking of Blanche Du Bois. I think we've talked about this on the show before.
No, we're recycling my stupidity.
Well, it's been on for 3 years.
Du Bois. It's bound to happen. It's like how Jerry is with us. He's one of our boys.
Yes, W.E.B. Du Bois.
Du Bois. But Kamau, another cool name, W. Kamau Bell, is also a great thinker.
Stand-up comedian.
Yep. He has an incredible documentary out right now. It's how many parts to it?
Four-part docu-series.
That's right.
On Showtime called We Need to Talk About Cosby.
It's a great title, and we kind of do.
So, he made this great series about Bill Cosby, and it's such a fascinating series because it's such a fascinating topic about Bill Cosby, someone who was once revered and is now this malignant person in society. And it's a really complicated,
it's complicated
issue.
Because he did so much good. And his presence in pop culture at one point, like, opened the door for a lot of people and paved the way for many people who were not represented. And so he changed so much. He was such a significant figure. And then, of course, committed what, and during that time was committing atrocities against women. And so Kamau's movie is about what, his series is about what we do with that. How do we, and it can apply to many similarly impressive and atrocious figures.
Well, let's hear from him.
Let's do it. Here he is, the host of United Shades of America and the maker of the great docuseries We Need to Talk About Cosby, W. Kamau Bell.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
For all the shorties that want voluminous, fanned-out lashes, mm-hmm. this ad is for you. The new L'Oreal Paris Panorama Mascara creates corner-to-corner panoramic lash volume. Their tapered brush catches every single lash, even those pesky corner lashes. You know who you are, corner lashes. With the Panorama Mascara, you'll easily achieve that effortless, false lashes look. It's one of Christian's favorite looks. Plus, it lasts up to 24 hours and is clump and flake resistant. And just when you thought it couldn't get better, it does. The Panorama Mascara is a lot more affordable than other luxe mascaras. And honestly, it probably does a better job. It's affordable, but it's deceptive because it comes in a premium gold luxe packaging. So if you want a mascara that can do it all, volumize, lengthen, and stay put all day, you can buy the Panorama Mascara on Amazon today. As a podcast listener, I'm sure you know that audio piques the imagination, like especially this show. So if you really want to feel like you're in the story, check out Audible's collection of brand new exclusive thrillers.
Their titles feature captivating sound design, eerie soundscapes, mm-hmm. and dynamic performances. So you'll be kept on the edge of your seat.
Here's an interesting psychological thriller that is out right now. It's an Audible original. It's called Oracle. It follows an FBI psychic who can help solve missing person cases when he touches those close to the victims. But of course, it comes at a cost. He'll see the horrific moments before the victims disappeared.
Shorties, I just got chills. You have to listen along with me. You don't have to.
No.
But I think you should.
Yeah, it'd be fun. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/long or text long to 500-500. That's audible.com/long or text long to 500-500.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up, we'll meet again.
Where are you, Kamau?
Oakland, California.
Oh, nice. How long you been there?
I mean, I've been in the Bay Area since 97, but I've...
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, but I've moved... I was in New York for a couple of years working, but I've been back basically here the whole time. I moved out of LA and New York before it was cool.
Yeah. Yeah. People were probably like very judgmental of it at the time.
Oh,
what,
no.
What
people
are you
thought
thinking?
People thought I was never going to make anything of myself. And I was like,
I bet.
You might be right. We'll see. Like,
what was it about Oakland that drew you there?
I mean, I really moved here. I moved here from Chicago to do stand-up comedy. And I really wasn't moving to Oakland. I was moving to the San Francisco comedy scene.
Oh,
but
right.
Even back then, the cheaper apartments were in Oakland. And so then I just sort of didn't really know anything about Oakland, but then ended up being here and ended up just sort of... I lived in San Francisco for a long time, but San Francisco and Oakland, it's like Manhattan and Brooklyn. Like, it's like some people never go to either one, but I would always go back and forth. And so, like... It just ended up being like, if I was going to live in the Bay Area, I was going to live, I'm married, I got kids.
Yeah.
This is sort of where the people with kids live anyway. So.
Oh, okay. All right. Come on. How are you sick of talking about this? I mean, you made a documentary.
Which is this? I was going to say, which this?
Well, this so far. I'm sure you're sick of just talking to me in general. But the four-part documentary, We Need to Talk About Cosby, which is riveting. I mean, it's
–
if for those of you who haven't seen it, we're going to talk all about it in the intro and outro. But I am so fascinated by this story. There was so much about Cosby that I didn't know, and I'm so curious about, in general, talking about these people, these problematic people who have done so much great stuff. I mean, mm-hmm. it's tricky because there's so much valuable stuff that they did. Mm-hmm.
And I feel this way about other figures, obviously. But is it, do you think it is a topic that people are afraid to talk about? I find myself stuttering as I as I say this.
I was going to let you go for a while.
Yeah. What happened? How much can he just spin around? You mentioned a lot of people passed on.
A lot of people we asked. You know, I always said if you stack the people who said yes to the people who said no, the no's would be way higher.
Really?
The no's would be a skyscraper and the yeses would be like a duplex.
Oh, my God. Yeah. Well, who's the most impressive no? let's start
Bill
at the
Cosby?
Top.
No.
Really?
We did not. No,
you weren't able
not,
to.
We did not ask. This sort of happened sort of naturally. I wasn't like a thing where I was like, I got to make this series. It sort of came out of like conversations I had with people and then suddenly, and it was just sort of like I was, you know, it sort of happened. Like we didn't go out and pitch to a bunch of people. It just sort of like, oh, that's a good idea. Oh, wait, we know him. Oh, he wants to do it. Like it all sort of like. So I think if it had been a thing that I thought through too much, I probably wouldn't have done it. Like, because I think I probably would have been able to talk myself out of it at some point. But it all sort of like happened. By the time it was like happening, I was like, oh, we're in this. And the idea, like, I didn't think that anybody was going to go, you stand-up comedian and TV show host, you should direct a 4-part docuseries. Like, that's not like, right. You know, so.
Well, how do you start, just logistically, how do you start?
So my day job is United States of America on CNN. It just so happened that Vinny Malhotra, who's at Showtime, had been at CNN and claims he was the guy who's like, maybe we should try that black guy over there. Like he was the guy He knew my work and had seen me sort of.
He didn't know your name though.
No, not at that point. Nobody did. I think people thought I was, Chris Rock's cousin at that point because he had produced my show. But yes,
well, no news to talk about there.
Nothing at all. But no. So it started with like, as I say, it was all great things. Started at a conference room in Oakland, California. Me and a couple other people who ended up being producers on it, three people, like
the
a journalist.
New Hollywood.
Yeah. We like all sort of sat around and talked about what we wanted to accomplish with it and then figure out, well, how would you tell that story? And really, I mean, it's like it was like a bunch of like giant sheets of paper that stick to walls. And you just writing stuff down and switching stuff around, very beautiful mind. And then, you know, normally chronology is not the good way to tell a story because it's too predictable. But it felt like to tell Cosby's story, there's so many people who have different windows into his life. People who have, like my mom's 85. She's the same age as Bill Cosby. So she has seen the entire thing.
Wow.
I'm obviously not 85. I came in when he was already established as Fat Albert. But then there's people younger than me who are kind of like, why do you care so much about this old man? Like sort of like, and so it felt like chronology was a good way to get into it. Cause it was like, there was stuff that I learned through the process of just studying this and reading about it.
Yeah.
Like I didn't know. And so for me, it was like, I sort of feel like if I don't know, somebody else doesn't know. And it felt like a way to sort of really frame it as like, you know, you could tell the story in a way that was just about the survivors, which would be fine. You could tell the story in a way that it was just about his life and accomplishments, which I would say would not be fine. And, really, if I sit down with a person who wants to talk about any of that, you sort of have a big conversation about it. Like if me and you aren't on microphone and we just are like, hey, man, what do you think about this Bill Cosby thing? We might go all over the place and talking about it because we would have different points of interest, different ways we thought about it. You'd have stuff from your life where it related to you. And so for me, I wanted to make something. I sort of thought of this eventually as like, it's like if I had a dinner party and invited all these people to my house and Bill Cosby, after we had the dessert and the port and the cigars, somebody was like, what do you guys think about Bill Cosby? This is kind of the conversation that would be
interesting.
Had. Like you would have your friend who's like, I don't know anything about him, but I'm an expert on drugs. Like, And you
it feels,
you know, yeah,
it feels that way. And it feels like the interesting thing, even the experts, the talking heads you have feel so conflicted about it. It's a fluid thing. It feels like an evolving idea as the documentary goes along. And I love the points of entry. I love how you play with the chronology. Where you establish. I had no idea about the I Spy years. I mean, I guess I came in. I'm close in age to you, I suppose. I came in during the 80s when he was. You know, America's Dad. And but I had no idea how groundbreaking some of that stuff
that's what makes the story so compelling.
I know.
Because it's
– I know.
With so many of the – you know, and let's be clear, most of – it's like, you know, is it all? 99.9% of the people who have been Me Too'd, maybe they're all men, but overwhelmingly it's men.
Yeah.
There's not – for many of them, it's just about I like their movie, but not they were my hero.
Yes, right.
And I think
that's the big
thing with Cosby is that he was, you sort of want to go, this was some, and also he wasn't just people's heroes because people liked him and stuff. He was actually doing things that we would classify as heroic. He was breaking barriers. He was
what he did for stuntmen, black stunt performers, and really standing firm, like holding his ground and standing by his conviction during a time where, yes, it was unheard of to be it was such a non-stereotypical black man role at the time. That was so new to me and fascinating. And like you said, it makes the problem so much more compelling and what to do with and how to talk about it now. What would your friends say before you made the documentary? I mean, what was the, how would you grapple with the issue of whether or not to, certainly you can't lionize him, but like, how do you deal with that? All the good he's done versus the obviously horrific things.
I mean, I think for me, it was like, it all started being, first of all, being sensitive about who you're talking to when you're having that conversation. I think that's the thing I first realized. Cause I mean, a lot of the nugget of this idea really came from the fact that when I started to sort of break in show business and they start to go, you know, and it was like 2012-ish, 2011, 2012. Like, and people would be like, who are you comedians you loved growing up? And I'd be like, and this was already, this is pre-Hannibal.
Well, it's after Hannibal. Oh, right.
But it was like already like, it was like an open secret that a lot of people just hadn't looked at yet. And so I would notice, I would start to go, I don't know, how do I not say Bill Cosby? But then how do I say Bill Cosby?
I know.
If I don't say Bill Cosby,
I know.
It's, I'm leaving out a big part of who I was, who inspired me to do comedy. But if I say him as if he's like this figure beyond repute, then I look like I'm either denying the women or I'm some sort of defender. And neither one of those things is true. So that's where sort of like, this is one of the things that, in, and this happens to all of us. There are many.
Well, Woody Allen, I have a similar.
Exactly.
Yes, I have an issue with Woody Allen. I mean, I can't say now, I can't go back and rewrite my personal history. I grew up watching his movies and loving what he did so much so that it's crept into some of my own performances.
Yeah.
You know, I can look at certain mannerisms and, you know, I can slip into it. And yet I find myself often in that position on the show, even like, you know, wanting to reminisce about something or reference a movie of his. And I feel really conflicted in doing so. I went back and watched Annie Hall for the first time in a couple of years, and it's strange to, it wasn't the same experience.
No, what's great. I mean, it means that we all have to evolve on this. And I think it is fine for me, like when I, in the doc, like it was really important to me to capture what was special about the comedy, about Bill Cosby himself, the comedy film.
Yeah.
Like, cause it was like, I don't think your average person realized how big that was for comedians and how big that was for people who know show business. Like, comedians who are very like different from Cosby go, that special is one of the best of all time. Like so for me, it was like, it was really important to go, let me explain this to you from a stand-up comedy perspective. But I can only do that because we've also talked about everything else.
But even the all the accomplishments and detailing how important he was to entertainment and just the whole black movement at the time, it makes it more... The more you learn about all those great groundbreaking things he did, the more tragic it feels like it is, because you know, it's like you have to deal with losing an icon, like the great fall of an icon, and that's something that I had never seen really properly dealt with in before.
I mean, yeah, for me, this doc is like really the tent poles of this doc for me are O.J. Simpson Made in America by Ezra Edelman. There's a way to talk about OJ where you just talk about the events of the night, as many of us believe that he killed those two people. Or you can go, what is the world that created this person and that this person lived and thrived in? Then when you get to the part where he does this thing, it makes it sort of like there's a different context around it.
Yes.
And so for me, that was about like putting context around Cosby is really a big part of it. And then Dream Hampton's Surviving R. Kelly. It's like, how do you actually hearing from survivors, like letting them talk, letting them be fully formed human beings, not just relying on news footage, and also letting them be more than just the stories of their actions with that one, with the person.
Right. Just victim number three or number, in his case, 23.
Yeah.
I had, and that was also, I mean, obviously that's the most tragic element of the whole story is the count. I had no idea, Kumar, how many women there were, and dating back so long.
That's that I didn't know until we started looking into this. Like, I think a lot of us, even if you support the survivors, you haven't, it's just easy to sort of read the headlines and keep it moving and go, I believe those women, but not to get to the details. But yes. So even people who believe the survivors, I think many of us thought that it all happened in the 80s or that it happened over a short period of time. And that it probably like only, and then it was over. And so you sort of go, well, maybe he got really crazy during the Cosby Show. And then he sort of, but then you realize from the very early days of his career, there's a woman who says that he assaulted and raped her from before he was known. He was Bill Cosby stand-up comedian, but he was not Bill Cosby cultural icon.
And the red flags, those, that's crazy that it was in his act, the Spanish Fly bit. I remember hearing that bit and thinking, you know, when I was a kid and I didn't connect, you can't,
yeah, no,
you don't really
not.
Connect it. But it's funny. It's like right in plain sight. It's right there. And yet he had established himself as, and prior to that, as an educator, as Dr. Bill Cosby. I mean, he was like I always thought of him as this distinguished, impressive, like authority figure. Yeah. So, which is, I guess, how most people.
Well, I think that is how he wanted to be seen. I mean, I think that's what we talk about too. Like, Dr. Todd Boyd, who's a PhD, talks about like Cosby and is sort of like the idea that like, dude, just be a comedian. You don't have to.
Yes,
that Cosby really wanted to be seen as
Dr. Pauly Shore.
Yeah, exactly. Something bigger, as an intellectual.
Yeah,
as a thought leader. And I feel like, you know, turns out your thought leaders. And I say this as somebody who gets that title. We don't tend to, thought leaders don't tend to be stand-up comedians. They tend to be thought leaders.
Well, like George Plimpton. I'm now imagining George Plimpton doing a set at the Laugh Factory.
Yeah. So I think that like the idea being that he really, and this is, we had Sonali Rashtar in there talk about like, he was encouraging this image. He was sort of feeding into the image. And like, you know, Kieran Amayo says that like they wore him, Cliff Huxtable and Bill Cosby wore the same sweaters. Like he was really trying there's a sense that he was really trying to blur the line. So much so that like, I've heard other people talk about this. We had a clip of Godfrey talking about this at one point in the film.
Oh, he's great. And Godfrey's, I love when he slips, because he does such a good Cosby.
And he just sort of slips in and out of it sort of easily. Yeah. And for me, that was also like, nobody else is going to make a film like this and allow this dude to do his Cosby impression. Like, you know, like it just felt like this is my film. Like,
yeah.
Nobody else is going to be like, there might be like, that's too funny, but, or that's too, that's not taking it seriously enough. And I'm like, nope, this is how
but he does it so naturally.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And he's being himself. And it was important for me that everybody who's in the film comes off like themselves. I think a lot of times in documentaries, people get edited down into sort of all sounding alike because you want to sort of have one congruent.
Totally.
And I was like, it's very important to me that like, that people get to sound like themselves. And sometimes editors thought they were doing the right thing by editing some of Godfrey's little things out. And I was like, no. That's who he is.
It does feel like a bunch of friends, people struggling with this, you know, after a meal. It makes for such an interesting struggle. It's something that you really have to struggle with.
Yeah. And for me, it's also about the fact that like, you know, when we're both in this show business thing, that it's like, it's also indicative of like, what's wrong with this industry.
My God.
And, you know, I always said industry was built by like criminals and reprobates and dreamers. Like it wasn't built, you know, like the accountants came in later and many of them were mob accountants, you know, like, so it's like, it was just not,
they were reprobates too.
Yeah. And it was like, and as I said during the press for this thing, it's like when they started show business, they didn't go, before we start making dreams, where do we put the human resources department? Like that was part of it and is in many parts still not a part of it. And I think for me, if anything, I was like, I really hope and I'm sort of, when I talk about the film, like it's a time to go, we need to make sure that these sets are safer and that no matter how high you are on the call sheet, that if you do something that somebody sees that they think is wrong, they can go tell somebody without fear of being fired, and that safety is a priority over profits.
Totally. I mean, come on. You do this long enough and you're in this industry long enough. You see a lot of shitty behavior from powerful people. I mean, I've seen it from, I'll be honest, mostly men, but I've seen it from women. I've seen it from an 18-year-old actress. Yeah. I've seen like really ugly behavior. And then you read about like my heroes, Charlie Chaplin and God, some, you know, there's some, you go back and Errol Flynn, and it really is, it's something that will, unfortunately, probably continue to come up, hopefully not as often, but it's also something that you have to struggle with so many figures, like we mentioned, Woody Allen, but the Cosby thing is particularly extreme because of just how important he was, how groundbreaking.
Yeah, it's the overwhelming nature of how big and powerful and how popular he was and how much a hero he was being, and also the overwhelming nature of the numbers that we know about. Like, I think the idea being that it's like that people say around
that we know
60,
about.
That we know about. And so it just feels like it's hard to sort of hold that all in your head. And this doc was a sense of like, really the question is, can we learn something from this? Is there something we can, because we don't want to just be like, because I think if we don't learn something from it, we're doomed to repeat it as humans do. So, and I think it's just for me, it's like, man, if I'm going to be in this business if I'm going to keep being in this business, you know, you sort of want to know, I want to be clear on which side of this line I feel like I'm on. Like,
yeah.
If anything, please don't look the other way. Like on United States of America, I'm on the top of the call sheet. But if I'm doing something wrong, like, you know, and
let me know
or let somebody know, you know? So I think the idea being, and you know, you've been in this thing a long time, the power you get is seductive, and the lines of what is appropriate, even if it's not criminal or harmful to another human, it just becomes like, you start to act in ways that, like, you never would act if you were the regional manager for Starbucks, you know, and not to say that those people are perfect either.
By the way, they're probably some real dickhead store managers at Starbucks.
Starbucks are unionizing because of regional managers of Starbucks.
That's true. We love our Plus CBD gummies.
Love it.
They're delicious and they work. More importantly, I mean, that's what you really want. They could taste like anything, really, as long as they work. But these happen to both work and taste delicious.
Especially if you're having trouble sleeping.
People struggle with sleep. And if you're listening to this and you think, I struggle with sleep, you might want to try these. Even if you're not used to trying CBD, it's a good introduction to CBD. And then if you get used to the CBD and you're into it, it's a good introduction to THC.
Oh, they've become a very regular part of my routine, and I enjoy them so much. The Plus CBD sleep gummies really get me the rest I need, and I always wake up feeling focused and refreshed, never groggy, and always ready for the next day. They're really great.
Yeah, you don't wake up feeling like you've taken some sleep medicine or something.
No.
You just, it helps. It always helps me stay asleep too.
Yeah, me too.
Which I've noticed. And they're all natural. They're all...
They're delicious. Raspberry gummies. They're made with award-winning CBD along with melatonin, magnolia bark, and lemon balm for powerful sleep support.
It's San Diego's trusted CBD brand, Plus CBD, and it's the number one selling hemp extract in the U.S. And then the Calm gummies are perfect for just daily relaxation. I take them during the day.
If you want to try them yourself, which we both highly recommend you do, you shop now at pluscbdoil.com and you enter the promo code LONG, L-O-N-G, for 40% off your order.
40% off.
No brainer.
Yeah. This is a hot time to buy and sell homes. The market's going crazy. I learned about it on the How to Buy a Home podcast. I bought a home a while ago. Christian just bought one very recently. And we both wish we had heard this podcast while we were doing that, because it would have cleared up a lot of confusion.
I've since heard it, and it's a little frustrating only because there's so much information that could have been very valuable to me during the process. But we're here to tell you that if you are a person who has not yet bought a home or is going to buy a new home...
So you don't have any regrets.
No regrets. You have an opportunity to listen to this podcast and learn so much. How to Buy a Home host David Sidoni answers questions like...
How the hell do I do this in 2022?
Or...
What if I'm not ready yet? How do I even start?
Or...
Can I buy a home with a 600 credit score?
Let me answer that rhetorical question. Yes, you can.
David has helped make buying a home a reality for so many people. Check out some of his interviews, like
episode
71.
71.
Yeah, I knew you were going to say
episode
that.
71 with Randy.
Randy.
He's a listener who had no job and zero credit a year ago, just closed on a $200,000 three-bedroom home on a half acre after contacting David.
David can help you no matter what stage you're in, if you're 19 or 90. He can even connect you with a great realtor or a unicorn in your area.
So get the latest on How to Buy a Home podcast and make this the last year you rent.
Listen to How to Buy a Home podcast today.
Find How to Buy a Home on YouTube and wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom, and up we'll meet again.
You know, it's funny. I was thinking about Cosby and my image of him. And I remember when it, like, drastically turned. Yeah. I remember that award show where Wanda was trying to do crowd. Yeah, Wanda Sykes trying to do crowd work, and he fucking let her have it. I remember talking to Wanda about that.
Yeah,
and how like how much that hurt. Yeah, that fucking hurts.
Well, it hurts twice as a comedian because he's a comedian, you're a comedian.
Yes,
help me out.
Help me out.
This job is ridiculous. I'm doing crowd work at an award show. This there's no way this is going to go well.
No, and you're going to shame me.
Just throw me a
throw me a.
And also, Wanda's not. He goes, we spoke English. Wanda's not that comic. There are comics that might be that comic. That's not Wanda. Yeah,
she's. I know. It was such an unfair admonishment.
Yeah.
It was like, God, calm down, fucking old.
And also, just let me do this, and I'll keep it moving. Like I'm not trying.
I know. It was such a moment of like, you know. And then, of course, when you start hearing about the accusation, it wasn't as far of a leap for me to make. I'd already been kind of like primed by that moment. It was really unsettling.
There's two things that have happened. Well, many things have happened, but two things that relate to this that have happened since this doc has come out. One is I have heard from people online and in real life who were like, who have told me the Bill Cosby was always a jerk story.
Uh-huh.
Like just sort of like, there's like, oh yeah.
Neil Brennan. I think Neil Brennan is a good one.
Yeah. Yeah. Like just sort of like, just to be, forget what it, not putting aside the criminal activity.
He was
always a hard person to deal with from very early on. And also many people were like, I went up to him excited to meet him. And also people who were like already in the sacred circle, not like people on the street, but like on set or somewhere where they was like, if you're in this room, you have to be cool. And he would still like not be cool in that moment.
Yeah.
And so I've heard many of those stories. And then the other thing I've heard is from people who are like survivors who didn't come forward, but have they know somebody or they're related to somebody or they are that person. But because they saw what the other survivors went through and also because they felt like this is at this point, it's enough. I'm not going to come forward or I'm not strong enough to come forward.
Yes. Well, I'm wondering, Kumar, do you think it nullifies all of the good he did? I mean, for the Black community, for the world.
For the world. I think the thing that I feel like is we have to stop looking at good and bad as a mathematical equation.
Right. Yeah.
Like how much good does it take to wipe out the bad?
Right.
How much
does it overwhelm it?
Yeah. And because I think it's like, no, it's just all part of the equation. And I don't think you can go.
Right.
So I think for example, you go to, and I've never been there, but I hear the pyramids are pretty incredible to look at. I'm pretty sure that a lot of people died making those. Like, and they were not.
Yes.
And they did not have union wages. And they did not have healthcare.
The Golden Gate Bridge.
Yeah.
Golden Gate.
There's so many of these.
The Erie Canal. I mean, it's like, yes. Yeah. God damn. I mean, I wonder how history is going to treat Cosby in that regard.
I mean, I think that, I go back to like so much of this stuff was like, again, conversations I felt privileged to have. And Cliff Nesterhoff, who's a great comedy historian, was in the piece. And he talks about the Pantages theaters at the end and talks about.
I haven't got to the end.
So he talks about how the Pantages theaters, which are all around North America, are named after.
Yeah.
I can't remember the guy's first name, but a man whose last name was Pantages, who was a Hollywood mogul who was involved in like the biggest rape trial of the day. And was like, and convicted of rape, and and like a horrible.
Oh my God.
And he's like, and all over North America, there are Pantages theaters, and nobody knows.
Oh my God. Yeah.
These things can be forgotten if we don't remember them. It sort of ties into like a lot of people in this country are saying we can't, critical race theory is infecting our schools, which is a fancy way of saying don't teach an accurate history to our children. And there will be a generation of kids in certain schools that will not learn an accurate history of America, and schools are already not taught an accurate history. And then there'll be kids like my kids who are like, you're going to learn it at school and you're going to learn it at home. Like you're going to get whatever.
Good.
And so I think the thing is that we have to hold on to the complexity of the stories. You know, in an infinite timeline, we forget Bill Cosby. But do we learn from the lesson now to create a safer, healthier environment for women in Hollywood, women in America? Because to me, part of this is also goes back to like, sex education is taught poorly in schools, if it's taught at all. And like, there's a way in which we're not teaching people how to accurately even be in their bodies and relate to other people in their bodies. And, so many young women are taught that their bodies are just vessels for delivering babies. And their whole life is about waiting to the point at which they deliver a baby. And and not about intimacy, not about how to respond in a crisis. And then we don't teach men how to respond if a woman tells you they have been in a sexual crisis. Men are sort of socialized to not believe them.
Right. My God. Yeah. And it's also such a it's such a volatile time. I think there has to be a greater emphasis put on communication, you know, and being honest and being vulnerable. And
we did an episode of United Shades of America years ago, a couple of years ago, about the last abortion clinic in Mississippi. And part of it was we talked to teens and college students about sex education in Mississippi, which is basically don't have sex. Now, the rate of teen pregnancy in Mississippi will tell you that that message is not doing a lot.
It's not finding its way home.
Which, not that teens getting pregnant is necessarily bad, but it is. But they aren't being taught safe preventative measures for if you have sex, here's what you should do. Or if you want to have sex, here's how to put on a condom. Here's how to take the pill. They're not being taught those things. They're just being told don't have sex and then they have sex. But they're also not taught what intimacy is. So you're not even teaching people the good parts about if you do have sex, here's how to have an intimate relationship. Here's how to engage with someone. Here's warning signs if a person is not good for you.
I remember I remember that age, and it's kind of all I thought about.
Yeah.
I remember hearing some statistic where like men think about sex like once every 7 seconds when they're 15 years old. I remember thinking like, that's it?
Yeah. and I think even when we say stuff like that, we're not even thinking about the fact that like we're not discouraged from doing that. Like if you thought about cocaine every 15 seconds, there's a program for you to go, hey, man, maybe don't think about cocaine so often.
Yes.
Let's figure out a way to teach you how not to think about cocaine so often.
Yes, that's a really good point. If you think about cannibalism more than what you should get help.
Yeah, you should sit down and talk to some people about how we sort of bake in like, well, that's how men are. That's how guys are.
I know. Or like you said, figure out a way to educate men on how to be intimate, how to be respectful and intimate. And you're right. Like the fact that Cosby came of age and became famous during the like age of Playboy, when Playboy was coming.
Yep. And Playboy was progressive at that point. It was like, so.
Yes,
so,
that's right. So you could hide and again, so. Totally. And God, all the good that he did.
Yeah, Hugh Hefner's the same
in
way.
In terms of like, yes, yeah. Same.
I mean, as far as like, say, I don't, he's not accused of all those crimes, but.
No.
Certainly.
Yes.
There are certainly a lot of horror stories that come out of the Playboy mansion and that culture
it. Yeah.
There's a 10-part series about Playboy too that apparently Cosby, Hugh Hefner features in our doc and Cosby features in the Playboy doc. Yeah.
What do you do now, Kamau, with Cosby? What do you do with his material? I mean, the stuff that you watched growing up can you listen to it?
I mean, I had to watch a lot of Cosby for this just because it was like, what are we going to show? What clips are we going to use? What clips do we want to use? And like, for example, in episode 3, there is a scene of like the where we talk about the Cosby. It's the episode where we talk about the Cosby Show, and specifically the scene, The Nighttime is the Right Time, where the family lip syncs the Ray Charles song Nighttime is the Right Time to the grandparents. And it is like, for a certain generation of people, specifically Black people, that's like the moon landing. Like, we all remember that scene.
Yeah.
It stayed with us. It meant a lot to us. We talked about it the next day. It's just one of those, like, those scenes where you're like, this is important.
Formative. Totally formative.
And so when I watch that scene, I can still get taken away by the memories of who I was when I first saw that. And I can still look at like, man, look at how generous Bill Cosby, the comedian, is being to these other people in this scene.
Yeah.
So I don't think it's about throwing it away. If you want to throw it away, I don't demand everybody taking all the art and all the stuff in the world equally. So, but if you don't want to throw it away, I think it becomes my responsibility and hopefully everyone else's to go, also, there's more here, because that's kind of the way it is with all art. There's also more here. It doesn't have to be criminal, but there is just, it's not just what you see.
Yes, and if things were brought to light, if there was more transparency, like you said, is a good thing that is now coming of all of these, the unearthing of these horror stories. But if there had been more transparency back then, and a safer environment for women to come forward, who knows what we'd be saying about Mozart right now, or Picasso, some of these.
We were just I was talking to Kelly, who I work with, she worked on the Cosby Doc, and we work on lots of things about. Mm-hmm. This thing about rock music, baked into rock music are many stories of famous rock musicians basically
part of the
adopting young girls so they can then marry them or date.
That Cameron Crowe made a movie about that like glamour, like romanticized.
just the idea that like.
Let's not cancel that. Please don't cancel that.
But it's just, but like, I love them. Baked into the legend of rock and roll music is that
Yes.
Is that the bigger musician you are, the more you're allowed to adopt a teen girl or a young girl and raise her to the age at which you can marry her or date her.
Oh my God.
And it's like, there's many stories of this.
Oh, Jerry Lee Lewis. Yep. I mean, fucking Elvis. Yeah,
exactly. And now there's an Elvis movie David coming Bowie. Out. I mean,
oh my God. Oh, really?
I'm like, are they going to get into that? They're probably not going to get into that.
They're probably not going
to get into that. But, but to me, it's like, it's just, so I think the thing we have to do is, I think we sort of gotten into this thing that like showbiz was somehow, well, those people, they're allowed to do that. But what it does is, first of all, there are people being raped outside of show business and sexually trafficked outside of show business. But I think it has created a thing where we're allowing them to get away with things that you couldn't get away with.
They're eccentric. Yeah.
For me, it's like, we just have to admit that we're in show business. We're regular people.
Yeah.
You know,
we have to play by the same.
Yeah. And I think, and also it makes it a better, because I think the other thing is it makes it a better business. Like, there's a reason why it has only been in the last few years. It's only been in our lifetimes that women have risen through the ranks of show business to power positions. It's been in the last 20 years that Black women in show business have become heads of networks and things because it wasn't friendly to them.
Yeah. Yeah. It's as simple as that. I mean, which is, again, to bring it back to the impact that he had on not only the business, but the world, but that, I mean, some of that ground that he broke, that Bill Cosby is responsible for.
And there are many people in show business right now, many Black people who credit the beginnings of their career to opportunities they were given by Bill Cosby. And you don't want to take those careers away, and you don't want to tell those people they can't feel that way or that it's not true. There was the narrative, we addressed this in the series, that I think that, first of all, that these women are quote unquote groupies, that they were, and maybe they feel aggrieved groupies, which is not true.
Oh.
And also, there's a narrative that it's all white women who are trying to take down a Black guy when a third of the women are Black women. So I think there's a lot of ways in which people who don't want to believe have sort of baked into this, like, reasons why, even if this is bad, it's less bad than I want to think it is. And then I think we also don't want to, we have to get way past this in a post January 6th America. Multiple things can be true at once, even if they seem to be conflicting.
Do you find that come out, that a lot of that narrative, let's call it a pro Cosby narrative, is it as simple as him being too important to some of these people?
That he's too important to Black America. There are plenty of heroes that showbiz could promote for us and plenty of great people in our community, but we just don't get the same access to that level of success that white men will get access to. Mm-hmm. And because of that, those individuals who do make it become super important to us. So it's like, in the same way that, like, it's not just that you made it, you represent us.
Right. My God.
And specifically with Cosby, he was like, yes, I do represent you. Not every performer is that way. Not every performer wants to feel like they are a representative of the community, but Cosby's like, I am the best of us. And so we want to believe those people who say they're the gold standard are the gold standard, because we don't have that many gold standards because of how structural racism works. I get the struggle, and that's what the doc is about, the struggle, but I don't get the denial of what is clearly the truth.
Well, in a much less serious, much less tragic way, I'm just thinking about the Will Smith slap, that whole room, all those executives, producers, actors, gave him a standing ovation, felt like tacit approval of what he had done, of this like very like overt act of violence against a fellow performer, a comedian, no less, who's like, Kamau, you're a comedian. How did you internalize that? What did that feel like?
It's funny. This is the first time I've talked about this into a microphone.
Oh, really?
Yeah, because it was so, as a comedian, as somebody who, like I said, Chris Rock literally gave me my career. Like, he got me my first TV show, like, not like helped me get, but got it for me. We don't hang out, but he's like this mentor figure that got me my first TV show. And so everything, I look back, like, how did I get here? Because Chris Rock believed in me at that point.
Wow.
So there's this part about me, like, I'm sort of looking at it as somebody who knows Chris a little bit and go, oh, I think this is happening. I think this is happening. Well, at the same time, I'm not in contact with him like that. I want to be clear about that.
Mm-hmm.
For me, the biggest thing that is frustrating about it is how I knew it was going to launch 1,000 hot takes, and it did. Like, everybody was like, great, I know what I'm doing this week. Like, didn't matter what your media platform was about. You could be the person who makes pound cakes. I know what kind of pound cake I'm making this week. You know,
yes.
It just became.
I guess we don't have to think about the genocide in Ukraine.
Yeah, like it just became like everybody sort of like, and probably needed a Ukraine break. It was just like, which we shouldn't have a Ukraine break. But the idea being that, like, I think to me, it was just like all the things, all the hot takes it was going to launch. And then it just became this like, and then people having to like, it's fine that you have an opinion about it, but then people seeing taking teams to then attack the other team. Like, I'm team this, so fuck that other guy. And it just felt like that's not helpful.
Because yes,
at the end of the day, as weird as this may seem, and also then seeing like stand-up comics talk about how this was meant that comedy was under attack. And I was like, this is three people who know each other.
Right.
This is not three random people.
Right.
This is not a comedian and a random audience member having a, which has happened throughout comedy. Like comedians and random audience members. And for the most part,
oh my God,
comics take getting attacked if they don't get hurt as a badge of honor. Cause it's like, my words were so tough. They couldn't,
the Bill Burr rants in Philadelphia. Exactly. Like,
it doesn't, normally you tell that it's like a war story about the time in a club.
Yes.
You know, and I've heard about comics getting hit. And sometimes it works out where they get beaten up, but it's like, it's just, it's not that it happens a lot, but it has happened. But I was very clear, this is a very protected environment with three people who have some sort of history together. And somehow, whatever happens here, there is something happening with these three people that none of us have any sort of input into.
Yes,
and should not have input into. And I think that's even the fact that Chris hasn't talked about it shows that he's not being cavalier about his response to it.
I'm so glad he hasn't. I love that he's taking the time to really be deliberate and process
and I think,
it. In a way
that's, and honestly, I think if it had been random white celebrity who smacked him, he might have joked about it right away. But I think he's very clear that like this is this can take us all down.
Right. Well, Will Smith is also such an important figure.
For sure.
I mean, and groundbreaking in his own way. I mean, that, you know, to see I wasn't used to seeing that kind of character. I grew up in the suburbs, a white kid in the suburbs, but to see Will Smith, to see him like be funny as like a kid, like, though he was from the inner city, like on TV, that was,
well,
I mean,
hadn't seen
that before.
The show that sort of took on the baton from the Cosby Show, there were a lot of shows that tried, was The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Mm-hmm.
It became
it
became appointment television. It became
totally
a family that is not putting out the typical black family image, but still feels authentic to black folks who are watching it. It's on NBC. That is the inheritor of that Cosby legacy in many ways.
It's probably completely inappropriate of me to bring it up in this context because we're talking about something truly tragic. But there was something so jarring about seeing that act of violence from somebody that you've grown to kind of admire
For me, it's like I would imagine that I think everybody in that room was still in some level of shock, like just about,
I bet.
And that probably standing and clapping, like, you're clapping, I guess I'll clap. Like, there's a little bit of like, we're gonna stand. Okay, I guess we're gonna like, you can't sit if everybody's standing.
I know.
And then like,
I felt that at standing ovations of things that I'm like, this doesn't really deserve.
I always love the one person who stays sitting down during a standing ovation because I'm like,
well, yeah. I know.
Feel like, yeah. But it was super confusing. And I think people were like, maybe this was still a bit. Maybe we're going to find out when we leave that this was a bit that, you know. But I think it was just, you know, and it's also the pressure in that room is so weird. You've been in those rooms where it's like, you're not really an audience member. You're a part of the show.
It's this heightened, exactly. Yeah. Yes. You're like, especially when you got the camera on you. God, I feel so bad for Lupita Nyong'o, who was like, she's front and center. Poor Lupita was like, just like, what do I do with this?
I know, just the idea of like, now your face is a part of this.
Yes. Oh my God. I don't want to be a meme.
Yeah, yeah. Like,
that's the expression she was wearing. It was like, I don't want to be a meme.
What is the face of a person who doesn't want to be a meme? That's the,
yes, that's the meme.
Life could be a dream, sweetheart. Do, 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 shaboom.
Hiring? Well, with Indeed, your search is over because you can get rid of the search and just match. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. That's because Indeed leverages over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day. It's constantly learning from your preferences. Basically, the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/long. Just go to Indeed.com/long right now and support the show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/long. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Want to hear a really satisfying sound? Here it is. That's the sound I hear when I'm learning a new language with Babbel. And if you want to learn a new language this year, it'll be one of your favorite sounds too. Babbel's designed by real people for real conversations. With Babbel's quick 10-minute lessons that are handcrafted by over 200 language experts, you can start speaking a new language in as little as 3 weeks. I've been loving learning Spanish because I love traveling to Spanish-speaking countries, and I just want to be better at communicating with the people. I love the people there, and I want to be able to get to know them better. I also love the food, so I'd like to be better at ordering food so I don't order the wrong thing. They teach you very practical, real-world language skills. And here's a special limited-time deal for our listeners. Right now, get 55% off your Babbel subscription, but only for our listeners at babbel.com/long. Get 55% off at babbel.com/long, spelled BABBEL.com/long. Rules and restrictions may apply.
Hello, hello again. Shaboom and up and we'll meet again.
Come on, I have just a lightning round, sure. If you don't mind. There's no way to pivot to this after the serious things we've been talking about. What's your favorite emoji? What's your go-to emoji?
You're right. There was no way to pivot to that.
No. There's no delicate. There's no way to tiptoe into it.
Oh, that's funny. You know what? I'm a big fan of the two big eyes looking like, what? Like, I'm a big fan.
What? Yeah. Well, that applies.
Yeah, that applies to I find I use that too much. I'm like, okay, figure out another one. But I'm a big fan of of just sending that when people text me, sending that back. When people,
oh, really? Like,
Or like, you know, or like sending articles to my group chat and putting that emoji on it. Like, look at this.
Oh, yeah. Yes.
I think that emoji does a lot of work because it could be look at this in a good way, look at this in a bad way.
Yes.
I don't understand this. I can't believe that. Yes. It says a lot. So the two big
it's
eyes.
Incredulous. Yeah. It's surprising. Yeah, you're right. Who was your first celebrity crush?
Come on. Oh, my God. First celebrity crush. There's an actress who is known among some people, but maybe not everybody, named Jane Kennedy, who's a black actress from the 70s and who was like, and I don't even remember what, I think she was just like in Jet Magazine a lot. Like, I think that was just like J-A-Y-N-E, Jane Kennedy, who was just like in that Pam Grier era of black women.
Yes.
And
yes.
She was like, I just feel like my mom had Jet Magazine and she was in Jet Mag. I feel like she was just in Jet Magazine a lot.
Oh, wow. She's married to Bill Overton. Yes. Yeah. Okay, that's funny.
Yeah. And then I would say, related to that is just like, you know, the opening scene from the TV from Linda Carter in Wonder Woman, I would be like, Screech!
Yes, yes.
Stop everything Wonder Woman is on.
It's a common, that's a pretty common, that's a touchstone answer.
Jane Kennedy, we'll give her props.
What is your favorite ice cream flavor?
Ben & Jerry's. I used to be a super duper scooper before, like back in the day, at Ben & Jerry's in Chicago on Armitage. Doesn't exist anymore. And they had a flavor that Ben & Jerry's does not make anymore called coconut almond fudge chip. That was the best ice cream flavor.
That sounds amazing.
And they've done different coconut flavors, but that was the best ice cream flavor. Ben & Jerry's. I know I'm not famous enough to get my own ice cream flavor, but when I become famous enough, I want to bring that flavor back.
What is your favorite holiday?
Thanksgiving, and it's not even close. Now, I say that understanding that Thanksgiving has a history that my wife actually, every Thanksgiving goes, let's acknowledge that we're in Oakland. We're on a lonely land, the native land of this.
Uh-huh.
So we talk about the history of Thanksgiving and how that works. But my kids, it's funny, they talk about this. They're like, Dada, why is your favorite holiday Thanksgiving? Because it is just about a meal. It's not about presents. It's not about the clothes. It's not about new clothes. It's not about it's not about like, but I thought I was going to get this and you got me that. It's just like, it's not about like, I don't know what.
And they're like, that's why we hate it.
Exactly. It's not about like I didn't grow up with Valentine's Day as a thing that was a big deal, but my wife did. So like every Valentine's Day, I don't know when to stop or what is the level of Valentine's Day present to give. Thanksgiving is just about family and talking and hanging out and, you know, and I make sweet potato pie. So So we talked about the colonialist history of it, and also Native American land we're on. But also, I just like the meal. So yeah.
What is a game show, past or present, that you would like to be a contestant on?
Oh, a contestant. I thought you were going to say host.
Or host. God, yeah, you actually would be.
And I know he sort of seems like he owns it, but I love Deal or No Deal. I think that I just love the fact that it's just about, can you say numbers out loud? I can. Then you can compete.
Yes.
I love that it just sort of, there's no quiz question that is asked. It is just about,
you're right.
Can you say numbers repeated over, can you say numbers? Yes, I can. Then you're qualified. Like, I love to see people's emotional putting, like, why they're doing the thing, when it's like, it is literally just about picking a number and then defending that number for like a day.
That's right. I love that he always kind of fights. I talked to him about this, actually, fighting the urge to get to try to convince people to stop.
Yeah,
you know, people get swept up in their greed and like, I'm going for all of it.
They
get like,
but really, there's no reason for you to. There's nothing here.
No. I know.
You don't know anything about what's in that case.
He said that he's like, this is a much, just take the, you know, this is a lot of money.
And Howie's a very nice guy and he's been nice to me. So I don't want to say I want him to take his show. I'm just saying if he's ever done, I would, but I also would be happy to compete on it. I just love the idea of like, can you, and even my kids, like we will go to like, you know, like places where they have carnival games, like skee balls.
Yes.
They will play the Deal or No Deal arcade game.
Oh, which is, that's hilarious.
Can you press a number? You don't even have to say it. You have to press a number.
That's, shout out to briefcase number three, Lisa Cleave, my old friend Lisa. What is an acclaimed movie come out that you are embarrassed to admit you haven't seen? Like people kind of shame you for.
Oh my God. So an acclaimed movie that because I guess the key part is I have to be embarrassed about it.
Well, yeah, it's like, it's like you're kind of embarrassed to admit it out, like to say it out loud.
Like if it comes
like out. I haven't seen Network. I haven't seen Pretty Woman in its entirety. Oh. Dirty Dancing. I know.
I
know.
Dirty Dancing, but I don't have, my wife is still mad at me, but I have no shame about that. So there's different categories. There are movies that, let me see. I'm starting to get sweaty. So there's a whole series of movies that are very popular, especially among my generation of black people. It starts with, there's like The Best Man and all the movies that follow Best Man.
Oh, yes, yes. Oh, my God.
I have not seen any movies in the Best Man cinematic universe.
Oh, okay. Best Man Holiday.
Nope. It's one of those things that like, especially I'm at the right age where it's like, if it comes up, I just have to sort of like, That's crazy.
Yeah. If you ever run into Morris Chestnut, just kind of lie.
Now that I've said it, I'm going to go watch them right now because I just don't want to. Because otherwise it's going to be a problem. But it's just
Taye Diggs tomorrow.
Yeah. I think there's just movies where you're like, I was out doing stuff and then I never.
I know.
And there's also when you're. People forget there was a time where if it wasn't on TV or you didn't see it in the theater, you just didn't see it. Like it wasn't just like,
that's true.
You weren't just pulling it up on your TV. So like it's,
Do you drink coffee or tea? And how do you take it?
More coffee than tea. There's a funny, like somebody, I think it was a tweet or somebody, has anybody ever finished a cup of tea? Which I feel like I respond well to that because,
I'm almost done.
But you haven't finished it yet. It's not going to happen.
No, in my Meredith Vieira.
Oh, that's, I love mugs.
I keep all of them.
I love mugs from TV shows.
Yes, me too.
Yes. I got a good one from the Wendy Williams show that has.
That's great.
You drink out of a giant, it's a huge mug and the thing you drink out of is like her lips. It's very,
That's funny. Yeah,
shout out
that's
to Wendy Williams. But, so. Coffee and I ruin it by putting in lots of sugar and a little bit of milk.
Oh, okay.
I'm very sweet.
Okay. If you could learn another language, what would it be?
I mean, I gotta learn Spanish. It's just ridiculous at this point. I live in California. My kids are learning Spanish. It's one of those things where it's like, just the other day, I was like, I gotta get that Babbel app and just do this. I just gotta knock this out.
Duolingo's good if you're consistent with it. I stopped doing it. It was something during the pandemic.
Well, that's the thing. It just feels like I know how it works. You download it and you do day one, day two, day three, day two.
What is your favorite cereal?
My favorite, it's funny. My daughters call it data cereal. I'm a big, there's a hemp cereal. I forget who makes it.
Oh,
it's like hemp cereal with like, I'm a big granola guy. It's Nature's Path, pumpkin seed, and flax. Doesn't it sound fun?
No, but I love that. I mean, now that we're older, you shout them out, maybe they'll sing.
No, I know. I just realized, and then my daughters call it data cereal, like because it's the cereal I eat.
That's cute. They're
like, what do you want for breakfast? Data cereal. All right.
That's cute. If you had to choose a different first name, what would it be?
Spencer.
Spencer.
Yeah.
Wow. You had that ready. Wow. Okay. Spencer. That's a cool name.
Spence. I just always liked that name in high school. I felt like I could be a Spencer. I could be a Spencer. Seems like a cool dude.
Yeah.
Spence.
Spence.
Spenny. Yeah.
If you had a sandwich named after you that come out, what would it be?
Well, there's Ike Sandwiches in the Bay Area where they do name sandwiches after local celebrities, and every time, and so I keep waiting for the reach out Ike Sandwiches.
Well, what would it? Wait, so what's the name of the place?
Ike's.
Okay, Ike's. Come on, Ike's.
Yeah, they have like baseball players who haven't played on the Giants in years on their sandwich.
Come board, on.
So yeah.
Come out.
Yeah. Come on. Yeah.
Come out. So, Ike's. Okay, what would be on it? So tell Ike's what you would like on the come out.
So the best sandwich that exists that a lot of people have tried to replicate, there's a place called Bake Sale Betty's in Oakland. Uh-huh. And it is a fried chicken sandwich on a Dutch crunch roll with spicy jalapeno slaw.
Jesus.
And then I drench it in hot sauce. So that's what I bring to it.
So
it's not, but it's not a Nashville. It's not the ridiculous. I'm not saying it's ridiculous, but it's not the thing where the whole thing is covered. It was slathered in hot sauce. You just put enough on where you can taste it. And it's got a little bit of, then the slaw is it's like a vinaigrette slaw. So you get the acid from the vinaigrette, you get the heat from the, hot sauce, Tapatio, Cholula. We're not trying to win a contest with the hot sauce. We just want the taste and like a solid Dutch crunch roll on the top. For the crunch of the roll and the soft on the inside, you don't toast the roll. That would be if they made. First of all, Bake Sale Betty makes it, and she does a great job. She's one of my friends. Shout out to Bake Sale Betty.
But if that
sandwich was named after me,
would add the spicy. It would add the hot sauce.
The hot sauce would be a part of it. You couldn't get it without. If you got it without the hot sauce, it would be called something else.
Okay, or if you were like Hillary Clinton and you just had it in your purse.
Yeah, if you were just the kind of authentic person who carries hot sauce in their bag. Because that's what you really do. And if I look in your bag, there will be hot sauce in it.
Yeah. Sure. I wish they had done that. I wish they had called her bluff.
Yeah,
let me see it.
Yeah.
Yeah. What is your favorite Tom Hanks movie? Come on.
Oh, my God. Tom Hanks, first of all, from the Bay Area. He was born out here. Went to Skyline High School, I believe. So I feel like I'm of the age where I remember him from Bosom Buddies. Like that was a show that I watched.
Oh wow, yeah.
So yeah, I just want to be clear. Oh so God. All you new school Tom Hanks fans are like, I liked Philadelphia.
Sully.
Yeah. No. So I have a very sort of like, I know people like he's the base of, so I've been with Tom Hanks since One Red Shoe or whatever, you know. So One Red Shoe. My favorite Tom Hanks movie is, I mean, he's a great actor, but I wonder if watching it now would be different because of the implications. But Big, I was like
Big. Fuck yes.
I thought you were gonna hold up that you'd written it down. You are correct.
No. But I thought you were maybe circling that.
Big might be weird to watch now about a 12-year-old boy who becomes a man who has sex with an adult woman. Maybe we look at that differently now.
I wonder.
I don't think they're gonna remake that movie, but.
But I also don't think they'll cancel it because it's too beloved.
Yeah, it's too beloved. It's and he was so it was just Tom Hanks is so. And then, I mean, I'm a Tom Hanks fan mostly across the board. So
would you rather take a time machine to the past or the future?
Oh, it's future and it's not even close.
Wait
a minute. Yes. Hold on.
I mean, is there an era that you would most want to explore in the past?
I always felt like me and my dad, I should have been born when he was born and he should have been born when I was born because he would have really.
Oh, that's so interesting.
He was really like a sort of like brainy go-getter business mind.
He'd have been into tech.
He'd have been in Silicon Valley. He'd have been, whereas I would have been. What do you mean you didn't go to Woodstock? What do you mean you didn't?
I could see you back in that generation.
Yeah.
Yes.
What do you mean you weren't?
Your aesthetic is that.
What do you mean you didn't ever saw Jimi Hendrix play live? What are you talking about?
Yeah.
What do you mean you didn't go see John Coltrane? I don't understand.
Yeah. And was he like, well, I had no interest in that.
No, he did have interest, but he was also just like. Like the funny thing about my dad, he was just too cool for everything. Like he was just
funny. Isn't that funny?
It's not that he was not interested. He's like, I'm not going to some concert to see that. He's too cool for all the schools.
Well, he might have been smart to miss Woodstock. The more I hear about,
be there. We have many more stories to tell about that too.
Yeah. Are you more of a talker or a texter? Come on,
talker. I mean, yes. I've adapted, but I would I'd rather get on the phone and talk it out, and then have to sort of you know, I'm that person who starts sending the long texts like, screw this. Hey,
I know. I do the same. I've gotten really into the voice text. You know, when you hold down the button.
Friend of mine does it. I tried to do that. It just doesn't. Like, I just want to hear your response. I'm going to send my voice. So
yeah. It's a little selfish. Yeah. It's like you can hear me.
Exactly.
Are you a do you prefer the toilet roll over or under? Do you have a preference?
I don't. Who's under? What are you talking? I don't
get it either, but some people swear by it.
I mean, I literally will change it. Like in my house, I'm like somebody.
Yes.
Yeah. No, I don't.
I know.
I don't understand why under would be. I don't even. There's certain things that's where I'm going to draw the line. I'm pretty inclusive and accepting of things, but that's too much.
Come out. Would you mind finishing the sentence for us, if you would? Life is short, so.
Life is short, so have some fucking gratitude.
Yes. Well, I have so much gratitude for the time you've taken. I appreciate it. I could talk to you for hours.
No, thanks.
I love your show too. I'm such a fan. Oh man, I'm so glad you agreed to do this. And you're such an interesting person. I really appreciate your time.
Yeah, thanks. No, it's an honor to be asked. I'm happy to be here. It's like, this is the funny thing about this business in this era. It's like, we can all sort of like connect with people that like, you're just a person on a screen up until this conversation.
So I know. I love it. Yeah, I really
so
love
like,
it.
It's like, oh, now it's all right. That thing, I'm sure you, I feel like I kind of know who that guy is, and now I'm like, oh, now I'm talking to him. So yeah.
Thanks, Kamau. Right. Such a fan of your work, and
thanks.
Thank you.
So that just happened. That just happened.
He vaguely sounds, you know who? Like who? Former friend of the show.
Okay.
It's a hint. A little bit of a like a Muppety laugh. Yes. A brilliant guest.
Oh, yes, Neil deGrasse Tyson. Yes, he does.
Doesn't he sound like him a bit?
He does. Oh, my God. Yes, great. And it's got like a commanding. Mm-hmm. He's got a great voice.
Resonance.
Yes, he's got a real resonance. Yeah, he really does. And
I like how you started the interview by asking him if he was sick about talking about Cosby. You're like, you must be sick of talking about this.
And it's called We Need to Talk About Cosby.
And then you talk about it for half an hour.
Well, I know. But I figured just
why do you think he's sick of talking about it?
Because
he's here to promote the show.
Yeah, his movie's not called I'm Sick of Talking About Cosby. It's called We Need to Talk About Cosby.
We need to stop talking about Cosby. It's enough already.
That's like his legal team. Cosby's legal team makes a competing docuseries. All right, enough about Cosby already. But no, I know. I just figured what I meant was because he was doing so much. I imagine he was doing a lot of press. And when it's specifically about this one thing, in this case, Cosby, I don't know. It was a pretty dumb thing to say.
Yeah. It's pretty wild, that whole thing. I mean, it's I know. Like, what do you say?
What do you say?
I think he summed it up really well when he said, you know, he, Kamau being a black comedian, was, I'm sure, is often asked who inspired him and who.
A Kamaudian.
Who kind of paved the way for him. And he said something. I'm paraphrasing a little bit, but he said, can you paraphrase a little bit? I think you just either paraphrase or you don't. I'm paraphrasing.
Yeah, but I think there are degrees of paraphrasing.
He said, how do I say Bill Cosby and how do I not say Bill Cosby?
Right.
Was an inspiration. And that kind of sums it up. You know, it's this really crazy duality where he's this legendary figure.
I know.
Who did these atrocious things.
I know.
But he's still was a legendary figure who helped so many people, but then he did these horrible things.
It's weird. It's like, so do you weird. Say, what do you do with O.J. Simpson's football career, for example?
See, that to me is much easier than Bill Cosby.
Because who cares about football when you're talking about murder?
Because people cheered him on, and O.J. Simpson was very influential in the black community, and he was looked up to, certainly. But I don't think on the same level kind of, that Bill Cosby was.
He didn't open the same kind of, I don't think, doors.
I mean, the
he
way that Bill Cosby, like,
I, that's, I, that
with
I didn't
kids,
know.
Was, like, the
I know.
How he was like.
Beloved.
He was beloved.
And I didn't realize to what extent, because I think I was a little, Kamau was like 10 years older than us. Like, that was his, like, he grew up in the 70s. We really more grew up in the 80s when he had already, you know, I knew him as like a, you know, he was. He was the star of the Cosby Show. So, but in terms of the amount of like what how he paved the way for so many black entertainers, I didn't realize the extent to which he did that and how he fought to do that. I mean, like, I know it's weird. It's that, that's the hard thing. It's why the docuseries is so good, because it explores that difficulty. It explores the difficulty in talking about him. I just said a few like nice things about him, positive things. I feel myself getting uncomfortable.
I know.
It's like,
I know, but
he's done these things.
But he did do positive things.
He did, but like, I know.
Like you were saying, it makes it easier in a way to hear stories about Bill Cosby where he was like hard to work with and kind of shitty. But I didn't know the one. What was the Wanda Sykes story? I don't remember that.
Oh, you don't remember when she was, I don't know if she was the host of this show. It was the Emmys, must have been the Emmys. They cut to her in the crowd. She was going up to people and like interacting with them. And she went up to Cosby, tries to have fun with him. She's not being rude at all. She's being respectful. She's like, you can tell. She's like, I mean, he's like.
And he shamed her?
Shamed her publicly. Like, it's so unnecessarily.
Huh.
Basically saying she wasn't like speaking properly.
Huh.
It was really uncomfortable. And like sat there just like glaring at the straight ahead. He was just kind of like. With his sunglasses on, it was really wild. And she was like, okay. She covered
for weird. I mean, obviously, by far the worst thing he did was what he did to all those women. That's by far the worst thing. But like a much less bad thing he did was being difficult to work with and being rude to people. And which to me always seems so antithetical to a comedian, you know? So, and I know that comedians are often dark and like they have that reputation, but there's something about like, you're so good at making people laugh, which brings joy.
I know.
But yet you're hard to work with and you're curmudgeonly. It's so weird to me.
I've seen that happen before with people and it always strikes me as like, something's phony.
But you also don't want to excuse that behavior by saying, oh, he must just have some, have some split, you know, personality, or he must have some issue that.
No, of course.
It's like, no, he's just a really bad person.
The bad person.
And he's like really manipulative, where he convinces people that he's this like sweet Puddin' Pops guy.
I know.
But he's like raping women.
Oh my God.
It's wild that he.
Oh my God.
And it's wild that he did that for decades.
So long.
And I think like as depressing as the whole thing is, and like, I mean, he's. Obviously much more depressing for the victims that he has. I think there's got to be some element, and Kamau touched on this, that you have to be able to learn from this somehow. You know,
we
need to talk about it in an effort so that it doesn't happen again, hopefully.
Which would be some, finding some positive in it.
But really a fascinating guy, really smart. What a smart guy.
Kamau.
Sorry, to be clear.
Just so you don't get canceled yourself.
He was really interesting.
We need to talk about Christian.
What does the W stand for, by the way?
Did I not ask him?
No.
You got to be kidding me.
No.
What would you guess it stands for?
Walter.
It is Walter.
Really?
Yes.
Maybe I did read that somewhere when I was looking him up.
Yeah.
Maybe that was in my subconscious. Do you want to read a letter?
Okay. Yeah, let's read a letter.
You're looking for a letter. That's
yeah. Yes. That's
Craig.
Okay. From Olivia Branco. Branco, maybe.
Like Branco with an A?
Yeah. Branco with an A.
Branco.
Branco. Like Lorraine.
Like Blanco with an R.
Yes. Exactly. More like that. That's better. Blanco. Who am I thinking of? Star of Goodfellas.
Lorraine Branco.
Yeah, Lorraine Branco. Thank you. Branco. Subject. Justin decided to keep his legs. Insert suspicious laughter. Hi, Justin and Christian. My name is Olivia, and I'm a longtime listener of the pod, probably like 2.5 years. Oh, thank you, Olivia. But this is the first time I've ever sent an email. Does that mean I'm losing my shorty virginity right now?
Yeah, I think so.
I guess it does. We wouldn't have said that.
No.
But yeah, I would second that. She says, you don't have to answer that. It's funny. She knows us. She knows how squirrely we are about that. Anyway, a little bit about me is that I'm 20 years old and I live in New Jersey, right outside Philly. Oh, man, I've been there, probably near Cherry Hill. I did a horror convention there. Back to Olivia. I decided to write to you today, May 5th, because I was listening to your new episode with Adam Scott. And the strangest thing happened. As it's the end of the college semester, most of my free time over the past few days has been spent writing a final research paper for one of my classes. I had spent so many hours glued to my computer trying to finish this paper and presentation that I was practically counting down the seconds until I no longer had to think about my topic, which was, drum roll, the negative impact of Italian-American stereotypes in the media.
Oh, we were talking about that.
We were talking about that. Wow. You can imagine my shock when I decided to take a walk literally 15 minutes after giving my presentation, and the first thing I heard was your story about having a boss that was supposedly in the mafia. As you explained to Christian why it's totally fine to make fun... Oh, boy. I don't like the way she's distilled this. As you explained to Christian why it's totally fine to make fun of Italian-Americans, I don't think that's what I said, and that the mafia doesn't care what people say about them, I just kept seeing those 8 painful pages scrolling through my brain, each of them filled with information contradicting all of the things you were saying. That's funny. It was like I was in a horror movie. Or would we be the ones in the horror movie? Because you just wrote a paper about it. I'm guessing you were right. You have much more.
Yeah.
You're much more learned on this subject.
And Olivia, in our defense, we are ignorant boomers.
Yeah, we should have. Maybe you should lead with that every episode.
I just assume people know that.
I did too. But I'm flattered that she thought maybe we were in the right.
Yeah.
And we were in the know after having written this paper. No. And now I'm afraid about what we said. Anyway, I think I did say a version.
Well, read more.
Okay. Back to Olivia. With that in mind, who would you like to have play you in the movie they'll make about this whole situation and your mafia-caused disappearance? Oh, my God. It's funny. Christian did mention in the episode that you and Adam Scott are of the same character type, so maybe he could play you.
He would be good.
Yeah. It'd be weird to see someone play me, like have play you. Wouldn't it be strange? Like, especially a good actor like Adam. I'd be like,
so weird.
I think, oh, do I do that? And anyway, back to Olivia. She says, it'd be a cool full circle moment, don't you think? But I don't know how cool it would be for me, because presumably I'd be either hurt or dead or...
Right. It wouldn't be cool for you. No. It would be cool for her, maybe.
That she recommended, that she's kind of part of the story.
She kind of put it out there into the universe.
I wonder if Olivia has any ideas who should play her. Based on looks, I think I'd cast Hailee Steinfeld to play me. Oh, huh. Because I'm obviously going to be in it too. Wow. She's ahead of us, or we're on the same page. If you have time, I'll also give you guys a would you rather to answer. Would you rather? We definitely have time. Creak, creak. Would you rather live as a character on Jersey Shore with a spray tan and everything for a year, or be in the mafia for a month? That's everything for okay. Well, would you rather live as a
Am I going to survive either one?
Yeah.
Am I guaranteed to survive?
If it's assuming that you survive.
Let's and do I have to hang out with those idiots?
Of Schnucky course.
Schnucky. We got a situation on our hands.
Situation.
The situation.
Yeah. It's funny to remember his catchphrase and not him. They were all pretty dark, I guess. I liked
Vinny.
Vinny. I liked Vinny.
I like Vinny too.
Yeah.
You don't look like Vinny from Jersey Shore.
Yeah, and you know who I would see a lot at the gym at shout out.
You saw Pauly, right?
No, I have seen Pauly. Ronnie the Rhino.
Oh yeah,
Ronnie, and I was always struck by how obviously he's very strong. He's strong like a rhino, but he's quite short.
Yeah, you said
Ronnie.
That. But you have to live in that house with them, right? That's the,
yes.
You're not just a person with a spray tan.
No,
and like
would you rather live? Hair. I think I'm going to guess that it's in the house, Jersey Shore, or be. I would rather
for a year.
I'd rather be in the mafia for a month. And just, you know what I would do? And this is going to sound like bullshit. I would try, assuming that I lived, I would try to use my time in the mafia to like maybe encourage them to be more legit.
Okay. You think you'd have that kind of influence?
No, you know who I'd be like?
That is the most ridiculous, arrogant take.
It's a fantasy.
You're going to talk the mafia into doing good works?
In my own way, I would try to like, do you guys have to, kill them? Like, you know, I would tell them the story of when I worked at the pizza place and how that threat really worked. Like, if you're good enough with a threat in the mafia, I feel like just work on the threats more than like killing.
Okay. Here is why I would pick the Jersey Shore, because I would.
A year.
It would be miserable. I know. It would be a year.
Drinking every night.
It would be miserable. No. I get all the bad stuff. It'd be really bad. However, if you're in the mafia, even for a week, for a day, maybe, you're going to, even if you survive, you're going to bear witness to horrible things. People getting killed, beaten up, threatened. In reality, right. You're not going to be able to change that at all. Being a party to that is something that I don't think I could do. Like, my conscience couldn't handle it. Couldn't handle the mafia.
Like, the reality is, it'd also be really terrifying. It'd be like,
of course.
And I'd end up being like Michael Imperioli's character in Goodfellas. I'd be like Spider. I'd be like, I'd say something under my breath about like, to like Joe Pesci type, because I, you know, something passive aggressive. And I get like I don't think I'd last long in the mafia. And especially if I was trying to like get them to, if I was trying to like shame them into being more, less murderous.
It's like, if I know that you're going to be fine and survive, it's funny, really funny to picture you in the mafia.
What would they have me do? I guess I'd be like a courier.
You'd be like a lookout.
Yeah. Yeah. I'd be a lookout.
You'd be a good lookout.
Yeah. I'd scamper back. No, I think I'd be too paranoid. Like, I think that guy might be in the FBI.
But that's what you want in a lookout. True. You want someone who is...
I get a lot of this, like, hey, Justin, come on. Stop busting my every 2 seconds. You kidding me? And not every van that drives by is an FBI informant, all right?
Yeah, that's pretty good. It might be offensive, according to...
No. That's specifically in the mafia, somebody in the mafia.
Yeah. No, that's what I'm saying. But wasn't Olivia saying that...
Yeah, she was.
It's not okay to...
I don't think mafia guys would care.
And by the way, just...
They wouldn't be offended.
No, I know. Well, I think...
Some nerd was like doing like, hey, like a mafia
to
voice.
Defend ourselves, I think to defend our argument, let me just say this to Olivia. I think when we were saying that it's okay, quote unquote, okay to make fun of the mafia.
Yes.
Italian Americans. I think what we meant more was like in the PC landscape of our time right now, it's is it considered something that like will get you canceled?
Exactly.
I think that's more what we were saying. Is it okay? Is it like
Yes. It's, of course, not good to do.
Exactly.
Will it be personally harmful, like damaging? Will we not be able to work anymore as a result of it? I'm hoping we're right.
I hope Olivia's kind of wrong about this.
Yeah. I'm curious to read her paper though.
Me too. 8 pages.
So then she says, that's everything for now. And thank you so much for taking the time to read my letter. Well, thank you for writing it, Olivia. It's a great, would you rather? I always look forward to listening to the show and I can't wait to see what's in store for the coming years. See you in a few years at the movie premiere, Christian, from Olivia. That's really sweet. Thank you.
Well, presumably you'll go to the movie premiere too.
Well, not if it's based on something that happened.
Oh, that's right. You'll be dead. That's right. Okay. All right. Well, I'll see you there.
Yeah. Okay. Well,
I'll be fine.
But if maybe not. P.S. She has a P.S. P.S. I should probably clarify that neither my family nor I are in any way affiliated with the mafia. That's good to know. I promise I'm the least intimidating 20-year-old college girl you've ever seen. Don't let my New Jerseyanism deceive you. Okay, bye.
Lots of ease.
Yeah. Well, it's a great letter. Thank you, Olivia. And I hope you did well on that on the paper. And if you want to write in, if any of you want to write in, like Olivia has so kindly done, our address is lifeisshort@wondery.com. Or you can comment on Instagram. We check the Instagrams.
Oh, yeah, we have an Instagram page
Life
now.
Life is Short Podcast. At Life is Short Podcast.
Cool. And thanks to Kamau Bell.
Speaking of cool.
Very cool.
He's cool. And check
smart.
Out his, smart. Check out his documentary. Check out his show. The documentary is We Need to Talk About Cosby. And the show is United Shades of America.
On CNN.
Yep. And we will talk to you next week.
Life could be a dream. Life could be a dream. Doo-doo-doo-doo-doo-shaboom.
Life is Short is hosted by me, Justin Long, and it is co-hosted and produced by you,
Christian Long,
and produced by Megan,
the
Monaco, and Katie,
the
Alan, and senior producer on this,
Michelle
Mish
Lands,
and we have an audio engineer, of course,
Sergio Enriquez,
and the executive producer is a man who wears many hats,
Marshall Louis,
and we do it all for a company that is called
Wondery.
Bye.
Okay.
And so,
Irish. I'm extremely American.
Oh, okay. Well, we ran into each other in Dublin. And what just happened?
Okay. Oh, shit. I'm sorry.
No, you can swear on it.
I saw you in Dublin and I'm listening to your podcast.
And your name is?
Avery.
Avery. Thank you so much, Avery.
Thank you.
What a funny random thing. And can you say thanks for listening to Life is Short?
Thanks for listening to Life is Short.
And thank you for listening currently to Life is Short. All right. Thanks, Avery.
Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet
you,
Justin.
For both you and your joy. Oh. And they always talk about you're like, oh, I wish I had,
Well,
people have to embarrass you and put you
no,
on the spot.
No,
no, no. This is
very nice to meet you.
So nice to meet you. Hi.
Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Life is Short ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus and Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Once upon a beat. Remember the stories and fables that captured your imagination when you were young? We have a perfect podcast to bring you the stories you remember, remixed and reimagined for the kids in your life today. Yeah. Wondery and Tinkercast are bringing you a music-filled weekly party hosted by me, DJ Fuse, and my trusty turntable, Baby Scratch, spinning tales in the New Kids and Family podcast, Once Upon a Beat, where hip-hop and fables meet. Hey, grown-ups, listen to Once Upon a Beat early and ad-free right now on Wondery Plus.
Once Upon a Beat.